It's December 29th, and just a couple of nights before New Year's Eve. And I think many of us are anticipating the retreat, a slight change in our usual way of doing things in the monastery. And so we're going to have an opportunity to really have many more hours in the day to look at the mind. There will be all of us kind of inclining in the same direction. Perhaps we will be speaking a lot less. And so we might see each other and wish each other well, but we might be quieter. And sometimes this might bring up some strange feelings like, is there something, some problem this person has with me? And that's for us to work with. I mean, maybe they do, but that's their problem. So we just have a larger opportunity to start kind of quietly working with our own experience. And many of the Anagarkas who are here actually were serving the winter retreat last year. And so most of us have an opportunity to know what retreat is like in long times of quieting the mind, turning inward and really looking at what our patterns are and essentially how we get ourselves into trouble, but also knowing how to get ourselves out of that trouble. Two nights ago, I have a routine I do every day, and it's, do some certain amount of physical work every day. I've mentioned that a few times now, and I've been on a streak of not breaking that for a long time, so I've gotten more obsessed about making sure it happens. And the other night, I went back to my kuti, and it was around tea time, and I thought, okay, I'll have some coffee and decaf coffee in the evening, and then I'll do some yoga and whatever. And so I was kind of knew I needed to act in a way that was kind of fairly quickly and kind of getting things done and just being mindful. And so I used this thing called an AeroPress, which I've used for a long time, and just started doing this. I've done this maybe thousands, at least 1,000 times by now. And so I was kind of making it and quickly, but I was being very careful. And then I put this paper filter on it. But then I just thought, maybe that was non-securely. I'll check again. Checked it again, put the top of the filter on. After the hot water was added, turned it over. And then with an AeroPress, you put about, 30, 40, 50 pounds of pressure on it. Well, the next moment, much of the room was covered in coffee. And I think I could have probably seen it as a fine work of art, but that wasn't what came up in my mind, nor was it loving kindness for all living beings. I was quite upset, and I might have said some words that should not be repeated. And then I just kept saying, I cannot believe that just happened. This has never happened before. I've done this so many times. And when I lifted off the cap, I saw that the filter had fallen in. And I just looked at the mess all around me. I had coffee on me. The walls had coffee. In fact, I was amazed just how far it had spread. It had gone all over the room. And I was just shaking my head. I can't believe this. And to add to it, it was, I was kind of thinking of the time and like how much time I had left and what I was trying to do and recognized that this was not working out my way. And I just knew, okay, the next step, just let's clean it up. Just shut up and clean up. In no short time, the whole room was clean. That was taken care of very quickly and even satisfactorily. I felt good. I felt happy. Perhaps it was even cleaner than it was before I started cleaning. I had to wash some of my robes. But then there it was. It was all finished. And there wasn't so much time left to do the yoga I was planning on doing. And I didn't have so much coffee left. But that experience, it's just each time we go through something, we do see like that we can just have these patterns of how we deal with them, how we deal with aversive problems. And then we can look back on it. We can say, okay, what were some mistakes that I made with my reaction to this? What was really beneficial? What was not beneficial? What was the better way of seeing things? And then, of course, the reality is like it just felt so much worse than what had happened. The reaction was that there was something extremely wrong rather than just, not a big deal. And so each time we engage in an action, whether it's sitting on our cushion and we're working with our meditation and it might not be working out and we're getting frustrated with it, or we're interacting with a person and another person and we've said something to them and there was a miscommunication, or we're not in the greatest mind state and somebody says something that triggers us, the tendency is that, you know, the whole world can collapse on us. We can have a sense that this is wrong. It's not how it should be. It's not fair. I want it to be different. I don't like this. And of course, then the opposite occurs when things do work out. Then this is right. This is how it should be. This is how I like it. This is how I want it. Good. And so the hardest part about our practice is that we're always being taught. We're always having these lessons over and over again. And it's very hard to see that, because when something doesn't go our way, there's something wrong with the world. There's something that isn't right, and it shouldn't be that way. And so this is the very essence of the Buddha's teaching around desire. We are always wanting something to be different. And our experience of dukkha is exactly connected to how much we expect that we will fulfill our desires in the world. We'll get what we want. How much we want to get what we want is how much we will suffer. It just is sort of a constant form. That's why it's a noble truth. The Buddha talks about this as noble. It's the highest truth. So just before we had, during tea time this evening, I was talking to a couple of the monks, and I was saying, you know, if my ideal monastery would be like this and like that, and the schedule would be how I wanted it, like this, and the number of monks around would be like that. And I could see that I was kind of absorbing into this state of like, that would be right. That would be most beneficial. That's what I want. And then later, just walking away from that conversation and just realizing how that kind of thinking is such a mistake. It doesn't mean that there aren't conditions which can't be better, but it's the idea of the mind creating a reality where we cannot be happy, where we cannot understand, have wisdom, see clearly, that we have to operate in particular conditions. Now, of course, some of this is true. So if we're in a war-torn country, or we're in extreme situations that are causing us incredible amounts of dukkha, that we're just backed up into a rock in a hard place, and it can be very hard to imagine in those situations that one would be able to really take in the Dhamma and understand it. But a lot of us have this opportunity. We're not necessarily in that situation. And when we do see that we have an opportunity, the conditions are good enough, or even that the conditions, when they're challenging, then they actually help us see our own foibles, that's when we can rise up to what it is that we're usually trying to run away from. And we can see those very things that we think are blocking us from happiness, they are those things that can show us that it is actually ourselves and our attitudes and our intentions that are stopping us from realizing the Dhamma. And so as I began the talk and I was talking about what it's like to be on retreat, no matter how many times I begin a retreat, I do feel a certain sense of relief and happiness about it. But I often also can recognize that I am ignoring the very challenge that moving inwards within the mind is going to increase. That challenge is going to increase. The difficulties are going to increase. In fact, it's just going to be a lot harder. And there will likely be times when there is happiness and some feelings of bliss and that this is right. This is a very good experience for myself. Or that there is wisdom arising, there's some clarity that's coming through. There's always going to be these very challenges that we're going to face, and each of us is going to go through this in a different way because we have our own karma, we have our own ways of being. And so part of this is kind of recognizing, like, okay, like, how are you going to react to the coffee explosion? How are you going to react to not always being with the particular people you want to be with? Or that sometimes you are with those people, but then all of a sudden something very disappointing happens. You see your own attachment to something being permanent or unchanging. So these are the challenges that often arise on retreat. And we're also in a point right now where we are about to have a traditional New Year, where we're going to probably sit up all night on the 31st. And that's also a time of recognizing what are some things about the patterns and habits of our lives that we can see with our own wisdom that would be beneficial for us to change. And what is it that we want to lend our minds to? What do we want to actually kind of say, like, what is this thing that keeps causing me problems? I keep doing this thing over and over again and making excuses for doing it. I tell myself I want to change, but it just keeps causing me the same problems. These are often seen as addictions in our behavior. And so we have an opportunity to really see them, work with them, but there is a challenge. There is difficulty in there, and that's something that we want to rise up to. And so this time, this very point right now, for those of us who are going to continue to stay in the monastery, but it doesn't really matter. Anyone who's just continuing on living, we can step up to seeing what our particular foibles and problems and also our successes, what we are very good at in terms of emphasizing those and moving ourselves in the right direction and using those very things in undermining and changing those habits that are causing us so much dukkha. And this is essentially the Buddha's teaching on right effort. But we have to be able to recognize these things, because it's easy to kind of to do what I did, was just thinking like, well, if it was a different place, different number of people and the schedule how I want it and the particular work I was doing or whatever it is, it's this, again, this condition that we're setting us up with. This is okay. This is the way that I will be okay or I will be happy. And it's always that location of something changing outside that's going to bring us more happiness, whether it's our own mind being more concentrated or not being around somebody's annoying behavior. Whatever it is, it's always when I get that thing that I want, then I'll be happy. And this is our delusion. This is what we're often really misunderstanding. And it happens a lot. I mean, in my experience, it's happening several times a minute. Just a constant kind of feedback of like being deluded sometimes around that sense of if it was only like this, or if I had that, or when I get what I want, then I'll be happy. And so for the retreat time, this is an excellent opportunity right now to kind of step back and really look like, what are my intentions right now? What is it that I really would want, you know, what that would be wholesome, would be beneficial for me? That, and oftentimes that's, to get there, it's going to take some amount of pain and effort, you know, some kind of challenge to ourselves that we may not want to engage with because it's difficult. And so whether we're serving the retreat or we're one of the monastics who are going on the retreat, and there's really no difference there in terms of how we set our intentions and what we're really, how we're trying to do that in a very skillful way. So for each of you, you know, what is that? What are those things that you think would be best to change about yourself, to change about your habits? What are those things that, not in a, you know, being careful around like the personal way of saying it, I'm really bad at that, or I'm no good at this, or I have this problem. It's just an action. It's just, oh, this is an action that I continue to observe about these things that I'm doing. And how can we possibly change that? So in our meditation practice, this is something that we'll want to really lend our effort towards, because often we get ourselves into trouble by not seeing very clearly. And it's kind of like a person who has like a outboard motor on a boat, and they've got that motor to start many times. They get it from the shop and they've gotten it to start many times and it's working, and then it just stops working. And they're pulling it, and they know they got it on throttle first, and then they're going to put on run after, but it's not even starting. And they get frustrated, and maybe they start hitting it. And someone says, oh, is there fuel in the engine? Of course there's fuel in the engine. I'm not an idiot. Oh, there's no fuel in the engine. So it's often we can do something like that where we're just not recognizing. We're hitting our head against the wall, and we aren't recognizing that we're operating with essentially trying to put a square block in a round hole. We get very fixed on what we're doing. You know, this is what breath meditation is, or this is how I'm supposed to understand these particular hindrances or something else. And we don't exercise possibility. There's a some other thing that we need to work with. So, I mean, someone can just be working with their breath and then pushing and pushing and pushing, you know, in, out, I'm going to stop these thoughts. And there's an incredible amount of effort. It's this heroic effort. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to watch my breath. But these obsessive thoughts, they just keep coming over and over again. I'm just pushing on that breath, pushing on that breath. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it. And there's this hindrance called aversion. It's just crept in there. And we might not see it. This could go on for weeks. It's the pressure we put on our meditation or what we're experiencing. And so we want to really look at that and try to examine what am I not seeing here? And so the Buddha gives us so many tools, so many possibilities of how to look at the mind, you know, to see our hindrances clearly. We often need to take a step back. And it's not always about the in and out breath, or it's not always about whatever meditation object you're using. It's often about our attitude or our intention. And so we are actually trying to understand that this is an examination. This isn't just a repetitive doing of awareness or watching. We're trying to see clearly into what our problems are, where our pitfalls are. So during this time right before the retreat, it's really helpful to examine what intention you have towards this time. For those of us staying, this is a 3-month period, and we're all committed. This is often more of a commitment than the Vasa period. The Vasa period, the rains retreat, is a time when all the monks actually make a determination. They're going to determine this is our place to stay in the monastery, and then off we go. 1 week here, 1 week there. But that doesn't happen during the winter retreat. No one leaves. So what's that going to be like? You know, I remember I've really wanted to find this old photo that was produced by one of the monks, and it was at 3 stages of the retreat. It was January, February, and March, and I can't do it justice. It was so well done, but I think it's been lost to the ether. But it showed the first was like month was just somebody kind of excited or just happy, and then the next one was, it was this kind of famous picture of these two wrestlers, and one large wrestler was behind a smaller wrestler. This is the WWF wrestling. And the one who was smaller, he had this like look of just absolute glee on his face. And the one behind him was like this demon ready to kill him. So that was February. And then March was like a guy in an empty pool, like an outdoor pool, just looking at the deep end that had like a little bit of murky water in it, very depressed. I'm not trying to make things bad for what you're going to possibly prepare for, but these kind of things can come up in the mind. I mean, how are you going to deal with this? It's not going to be bliss for 3 months. There's going to be challenges. There's going to be boredom, fear, frustration. There's going to be times when you have a blissful meditation and it's wonderful, and there might be even several of these, and then just crash. It's gone. And it's not supposed to be like this. And yet it is. And so as these things are continuing on, you know, it's very helpful to take a different view of what these 3 months will be. If we just keep asking ourselves, okay, what am I learning here? What can be learned from this? When I'm having a blissful meditation, I think this is what it's like. This is how it's supposed to be. This is how I want it to be for the rest of my life. Just no desire, nothing unwholesome, nothing kind of just like so happy right now. And well, that's very pleasant, but it doesn't really necessarily teach us much. So preparing for the inevitable, which is that there is going to continue to be changes, there's going to continue to be things that are difficult to process, challenges, what isn't said, what is said, relating to others. And when we're on retreat, that's something we sometimes don't even think about. Like, oh yeah, I'm relating to other people. I'm relating to people who I'm living with for 3 months. No one leaves. And you have to deal with that. And the mind can pick one person who is that person that just keeps coming up. Someone who's very difficult for you to work with. And yet that is your teacher. What are you learning? How can you learn from this? And there will be others who are challenged to even stick with the program. And I remember many of you have heard this story, but it's often helpful to mention where time at Chidhurst Monastery, I believe, where a monk went up to Lumbora Suchito, Ajahn Suchito at the time, and he was a bit confused. He said, it was the beginning of the retreat, and it was kind of like unsure, when's it going to begin? When's retreat starting? Is it now? Is it New Year's? Is it like, I mean, then we have this period, and then it's, we have this, well, I'm probably on the 6th, and when does it start? I don't know. Like, it hasn't really been said, Ajahn, when is the retreat starting? And this lovely line he said, which I'm probably going to screw up, he said to him, well, for some of us, the retreat has already begun. And for others, it never will. And so you want to prepare yourself. What does that mean for you? You know, is that possible? You could be that person that it just never starts. The mind keeps going on its tendencies, its projects, its worries, its sort of sense, I have to do this, I have to do that. And there's just not really a recognition of what it is we're doing or what we're engaging in. And we just stay with the same program. And so these are very exciting times, helpful. It's a very helpful point right now in our practice in terms of engaging with the next challenge of these 3 months and really asking ourselves what our intentions are, just like this New Year's time. And we do need to be careful because sometimes we'll make determinations. We'll make these very strong determinations. I'm going to never fill in the blank. I'm not going to eat for the next 3 months. Well, that's not going to work out. Whatever it is, it might be a bit too extreme, or in rare cases, we're not pushing ourselves hard enough. So we have to know what is the right level that we're encouraging ourselves. Because often our tendency is to push ourselves too hard. Ajahn Janaka was just mentioning this during the Awada he gave us. Is it enough? And each one of us will have to determine that for ourselves. In the beginning, there will just be the retreat schedule and encouragement talks and the readings that we're giving. And then there will be times when the retreat opens up and there's a lot more time to be on our own. And so we'll want to work with that, but in a skillful way, in a way that's very helpful. So one of the most important things, I think, during this time is just to remind yourself to be kind to yourself. And sometimes we don't always know what that means, but just reflect on it a bit and keep that with you. How can I be kind to myself? If I had said that right after coffee exploded, it would have had a different outcome, or at least the experience would have been slightly different. And again, as I mentioned before, just continuing to ask, like, how can I learn here? How can I learn from this? Rather than it's not good enough, or it should be different, or it should be better. Because over and over again, our experience is teaching us that it is just the way it is. There is an influence we can have over our experience through right effort, but there is also just the experiences and what we have through our vipaka kamma, from the results of our actions. And so it's not really good to argue with reality, to argue with what's occurring before us. But it is most important to shift our attention towards what we can try to understand through the lens of Dhamma, rather than it should be something different or better. So just taking a couple of these suggestions on learning and being kind and reflecting on your own intentions, what it is that you can really bring to the beginning of this journey we're about to engage in. As Lumbar Pasana would say sometimes when he was would be asked questions, he'd say, use your own wisdom. And with that, I wish us all well in our journey.